day and welcome back, Fife fans, to episode 19 and the final episode of season 1. That's right, we have seasons. We've been recommissioned, so don't worry. If you keep listening, you'll eventually get...
Have we?
I've recommissioned us. I've put up the money. So yeah, don't worry. If you keep listening, you'll eventually get to find out if Jamie ever gets a soul, if I ever amount to anything, and if Mark gets a weave, if Beattie comes back, and how long any of our guests will last.
Is that in terms of they're going to die imminently?
Well,
because that's another bleak opening.
Yeah.
Once again, we really need to boost the positivity, guys.
Just embracing the void.
Yeah.
Well, here we go. Anyway, as always, the first rule of Fife Club is please talk about Fife Club. Know anyone that's into podcasts or has a commute where we will help fill in the dark and plunging void of their inner consciousness? Then give us a hearty recommendation. We'd appreciate it muchly. Now to the important bit. Around the table with myself, Kutch, tonight is someone who was once told he was well hung, but was more a comment about his body odour than any appendages. It's Jamie.
Hello. Factual.
And next to him is somebody who is still hung up on the idea that anyone would eat a double-decker, a tatty scone, or mushrooms. It's Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Could you imagine all of them together? It's a fucking disgrace.
And
you should get that like you get breakfast in a kit in a can, you know, in a tin. Just get double-decker, tatty scone, and mushrooms.
If Ginster's made it, honestly, it'd be the worst thing in the world.
Only available in service stations.
Tasty. Anyway, in the protocol Angus Deaton seat tonight is her third time on the show, someone who hung out with the notorious KYT in their formative years. That's right, the Kincardine Young team. It's Mags.
Hello.
She's been tagging all of the all
I
of
have.
The house.
Yeah. I can still do the KYT symbol where they're also cleverly merged together. That fabulous piece of design. But I can do it with my eyes closed.
Yeah.
Good. You're scraping it into a table as we speak.
It's like doing that weird S thing, you know, that big S thing that was in
Superman
the Superman
the Resurrection.
Yeah.
Three lines in a triangle and all that stuff. I remember that.
You love that.
Also, we've heard a rumour that a retiree Beattie might be coming back. But, you know, that's not really how I was going to introduce him. Fuck it, I'm going to go with it anyway.
So does he deserve an introduction if he's not even
bothered
to come?
I'm going
to
do it, because if he does turn up, then, you know, we'll embarrass him and, well, probably not. But if he doesn't, then this is here just for the record. So after retiring last week, he comes back as a potential guest, someone who once almost hung himself trying a turn at autoerotic asphyxiation. It's B.
Wow, yeah.
A turn.
Hey, what? I mean, actually, if he doesn't turn up, then we've got a bit of a gap to fill, because I'm pretty sure he was going to take us on a tour of the known glory holes in the Fife and Kinross area. So if you were listening for that, then he's not long to come back for. Yeah.
He is a Floyd Mayweather of podcasting. He retires and then instantly is teasing a comeback.
Yeah.
Just to generate that sweet pay-per-view revenue.
Yeah. It's all about his money. That's all it is. It's all money for Beaker.
Michael Money Beattie.
So if we've been recommissioned, Kutch, where was my season one check?
It's in the post.
Good.
Just like a lot of ballot papers from Plymouth. Yeah. Or is it Portsmouth? One of them.
Who cares? It's England. We don't know anything about England, right? They're the same place.
What's got? Who knows anything about how English politics works?
No, indeed.
Last week we obviously kind of covered some of the grounds of what happened, what we thought was going to happen, and some of our fights where we kind of just pitted some politicians against one another as a kind of wee celebration of the great great joy of of democracy we were about to encounter the next day.
The wonderful festival of politics that is a snap election in 2017. It's really brought out the best in all of us.
Because you know what? We've not had enough elections recently.
No. If there's one thing that I've not done...
October.
August.
Yeah. I still maintain these very valid conspiracy theories that this has all been manipulated by the small pencil industry.
What?
To keep their profits up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a powerful, powerful, shady force.
It's between them, Argos, and IKEA. Yes,
have you got anything to do with the small pencil lobby?
I haven't. Okay. Wow, that sounds like an incident. Now that I've heard that, yeah, wow.
Always use a rubber.
Yeah. You're on fire. But no, I can neither confirm nor deny. But we'll be putting out an important statement as a result of scurrilous claims. Unfounded.
So yeah, it kind of all turned out that it really was a bit of a clusterfuck.
Omni-shambles.
It was the definition of omni-shambles.
So Doogie posted something to us that came from Radio 5 Live, and it kind of sums it up quite well, I think. So the Conservatives won but lost. Labour lost but won. The SNP won and lost in Scotland, but still won, and the Conservatives won in Scotland but lost. UKIP lost, but because of Brexit, they already won. The winner, Mrs. May, is being told to resign because she didn't win, and she won't because she won even though she lost. Is that sum it up about right?
Aye. Yeah, actually, that's pretty sensible as far as I can tell.
Yeah, so we're fucked.
But it was in the end, like, as much as we're on board of elections... Wasn't it bloody exciting?
It was very exciting.
The result was,
because it all kind of came...
Yeah.
You didn't know which way it was going, and then obviously the exit polls came in, and that got quite exciting. And yeah, then...
The exit poll, which none of us believed, was... Yeah. SNP number's completely wrong. Yeah. It was almost dead on.
It was crazily accurate, that, watching it and come in, and even though they made a few revisions for the night, it ended up pretty much as it was.
Yeah.
I have to say, I think, other than the SNP, the final SNP seats... I've been saying for weeks that Labour would do better than people thought, and I did think it was going to be close, but I thought that the SNP would return a large chunk of their people in Scotland. But actually, now that the results come in, it makes sense. The results that we've seen, and the places where the Tories have done well, and even the places where Labour did well, which we didn't really expect. I mean, the amount of effort that they managed to muster in this campaign, even though it was only a few weeks long, was incredibly impressive. The SNP totally took it for granted and were pretty pooped and a bit skint after the council elections. And there's nothing totally surprising and out the blue about what's happened.
I think that the SNP have actually are closer now to what their new normal will be.
Yeah.
It'll be between 20 to 30 to 34 seats.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be their new normal, because they were never going to hit the same high again.
Yeah.
But, you know, but two parliaments ago they had 6 seats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's a massive change. So it's someone to a Facebook group who was a Tory, you know, said it's actually almost, you know, I don't want the Tories to do too well in Scotland, but it's that having a competent Tory party again, who are a threat electorally, is huge, because it made Labour complacent at first, and then they lost all the power. Then the SNP came in, and they've been made complacent as well, because they thought, okay, we might lose a few seats to Tories, but it's really Labour who are a problem. But now in Scotland, it's clear it's both.
Yeah.
But also the Tories, but that will keep, hopefully now, politics in Scotland will be more on its toes. And also we're past the 2014, we're past 2014 now, in terms of that defining.
Yeah.
Like, I saw a couple of people say this online, and I agree, like, it's still a huge moment, but I don't think it's, like, there's not going to be a referendum in 2 years.
Yeah.
There might be in, you know, 4 or 5 years, but not in 2 years, like, you know, was originally being talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me the really interesting thing about the results was the resurgence of Labour,
which
none of us really predicted, and it's interesting because
I thought they'd do well, but I thought all their votes, and it did happen a bit, would stack up and save seats, and it did happen a bit for them, but nowhere near as much as I thought it would.
Yeah, but so people have talked a lot about, have we seen peak SNP? But I actually think that this is the mark of peak Ruth and peak Scottish Tories. Because I think the significant thing about this election is that Labour have done, across the country, but in Scotland as well, have done better than expected.
Yeah.
And that will give confidence for a lot of the left leaning or the traditional working class unionist vote. Yeah. It will give them confidence to go back to Labour again.
Yeah.
Because the Tories have been picking up votes from all across the board.
Yep.
Because they've done a very good job of portraying themselves as the defenders of the union and the only ones that can stand up to Nicola and the SNP and vote for us. And actually now, I mean, it's still emergent. They've only got, what, did they end up on 7 or 8?
7 or 8, yeah.
MPs, Labour. And it's very heavily reliant on Corbyn and Corbyn's attraction.
Yeah.
But it's the beginnings of the resurgence of Labour and it will give people confidence to go back to Labour again. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because I don't think the Tories, the Scottish Tories, will be able to keep up this momentum for much longer.
No. I'll tell you what as well, though, ever since, boy, have I seen and heard and been able to read fairly positive, or at least non-biased, stuff coming out about Corbyn.
Yeah, everyone's changed
their tune.
The Guardian has flipped, that is funny.
How they've all changed their tune.
Well, So just briefly going back to, I'll kind of come on to that in a second, but yeah, like on my kind of pre-election thing, I kind of thought the same as you guys as well. We were all like very much on the same lines about what we thought was going to happen. Like, I thought Labour would do much better. I've been sitting quietly in meetings with like people from London and things like that, and them talking about like how, you know, Labour are utterly screwed and things like that, and, you know, massive Tory majority. And I was sitting there going, I really think they'll do much better than you're giving them credit for. And again, I thought basically the Tories would get an increased majority of up to 20 seats.
Mm.
Except that on the day before, and in fact, like about 2 or 3 hours before the exit poll came out, I absolutely just shat it and thought, this is going to be terrible. I just thought I'm counting on young people. Yeah. They're absolutely shat it. But no. So I thought that was interesting. And Mags's analysis, pretty much, I can't say anything that's any different to Mags's. Mm. That's absolutely perfect. But on the Corbyn one, I suddenly had a little bit of fear today about, is there a potential? Because, like, if we go to Scotland again, interesting that Corbyn bounce helped Scottish Labour.
Yeah.
Scottish Labour people hate Jeremy Corbyn. So their seats and victory are now dependent on somebody they utterly hate. But also, I think there's a really interesting thing in terms of the positive coverage as well. I'm wondering if people are now setting unrealistic expectations for Labour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the thing about what you said in that first opening is, who wins, who loses isn't about what you actually accomplish. Mm-hmm. It's about what is the perception.
Yeah.
So I think there's now people who were of the Labour right or not Corbyn supporters now sitting in it, getting behind him to the point where they can set an unrealistic expectation, because they can't topple him now.
No.
Yeah, no.
Mm-hmm. Unless he fails to meet expectations later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, he did a reshuffle tonight, or didn't do a reshuffle really, because people were expecting Yvette Cooper, Chuckamuna and maybe Hillary Bennett. Well, he was probably never going to do it, but none of them have made the shadow cabinet, apparently.
Hmm. Yeah, his reshuffle is actually just replacing no, there's no word about her, whether she's been officially replaced. No, he replaced the junior ministers who lost their seats. And also put a Scottish person in as Shadow Secretary of State for Scotland.
Fifer, no less.
Yeah.
So this is the news that Deputy Leader, who I think technically she is still Deputy Leader of Fife Council, Leslie Laird, who got elected as an MP 6 days ago, was only elected as a councillor in 2012, is now the Shadow Secretary of State for Scotland, which is kind of insane. But she was, I did have a quick look at her on Wikipedia, she's from Greenock. Can we call her a Fifer? I think even being Deputy Leader of Fife Council doesn't make you a Fifer if you're from Greenock.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, under that stipulation, I'm not really a Fifer or Scottish because I was born in York.
But
I do feel as a kingdom, we have a strong racial blood thing going on. We're essentially Nazis.
Wow.
So, But yeah, that was quite a rise to prominence from honorary Fifer Leslie Laird. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Do you think that was actually just a game of, you know, short straws and dogs?
No, I think so. Leslie Laird was made deputy leader of Fife Council by Alex Rowley when he was leader of Fife Council, and he is now deputy leader of Scottish Labour and is the kind of one.
He's in Holyrood.
In Holyrood. Yeah. So he was elected in 2015 to Holyrood on the Mid Scotland and Fife list. Yep. And is the deputy leader, but he's the one kind. He's not a out and out Corbynista, but he's he in opposition to Kezia's Blairite stance, he is a Corbyn sympathiser, and I think there's
more like a left wing of the party.
I think slightly more left. He's from traditional union background. He's come through. He was a shop steward in I think the mining sector, mining sector in Fife, or certainly in industry in Fife. Came through the Fife. He is a proper Fifer, Alex. He's from Kelty. He does. If you ever listen to him in the Scottish Parliament. He does the worst speeches ever, but it's
and
good.
It's all interrupted. I am Alex Riley.
It's great. He's clearly like his speechwriter is like a well-educated young person from Glasgow and doesn't understand Fife inflection. But I think there's been a phone call there, not to Kezia, but to Alex Riley to ask who can I appoint, because I'm not putting Ian Murray back in.
He could have appointed his daughter though, couldn't he? Because she won in Midlothian. Alex Riley's. I'm pretty sure it's Alex Riley's daughter.
Did Alex Riley's daughter win in Midlothian?
Yeah,
I'm
pretty sure it's his daughter.
I didn't
his daughter
know that.
Or his niece or something.
His daughter or daughter-in-law or something like that.
Some relation.
Yeah, they're very, like, he is like old school Labour through and through. Yeah. So that might be nepotism. Or maybe he doesn't like his daughter that much.
I just think that most of the new Labour intake haven't really done a great. I mean, I know Leslie Laird hasn't exactly got a long and distinguished past.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that for anybody else to get appointed, would be difficult.
Yeah. I literally don't know any of the other ones.
No, I don't know any of them.
So I think
when I got elected, I was like, we're all brand new. I was like, who are these people?
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting. I'd agree with you. I think for me, the big story for Scotland is Labour. I think that, again, what we could say is it's relatively predictable about where the Tory votes came from. Like, basically farmers. Mm-hmm. And farmers and unionists.
Yeah. North East. A lot of disaffection in North East as well.
Farmers, unionists, fishing.
I mean, the North East was the strongest vote for Brexit. I mean, no local authority actually voted for Brexit. But the ones that came closest were the Aberdeenshire
Like
Coast.
Angus and...
I think actually, I do believe that it was, what was Angus Robertson's seat that was lost?
Murray.
Was he Murray?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay, no, it wasn't. Or maybe it was. I think that was the strongest.
Oh, was it?
I'm getting Murray and Angus mixed up. Yeah, you're right. Murray had the strongest pro-Brexit vote in all of Scotland. So it's not surprising that you're going to support... I mean, the SNP were still standing on a pro-EU ticket.
And again, that is, it's all the fishing villages along that coast.
Even though fishing is going to be totally fucked by Brexit, but let's not go into that.
They're giving trade away for some sort of access to a single market.
Well, they have to. They absolutely have to. Yeah. So, that's for another. I can talk. Yeah. I'm researching a policy paper on post-Brexit fishing at the moment. I'm not going to get into that. That'll take all night.
I once wrote a policy paper on, what was it? The fishing communities in peripheral regions in Canada, Scotland, somewhere else in like the Baltics or something like that, and like any like commonalities between them. I didn't know what I was doing.
You still did it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the joys of policy papers. Have got to be the only time when plagiarism doesn't exist, because you're just copying and pasting other people's research into a one document, and it's fine. It's totally okay.
If you work in London and you do something economic, it's just like you just plagiarise the IFS. It's like there are people that you just basically, it's like, and then if you work in foreign policy, you just plagiarise Chatham House. You know what I mean? There are places that are just there for you to plagiarise.
My basic income scheme I'll be working on, almost all my figures come from the IFS.
Yeah.
Slash ONS, obviously, but IFS as well. But that's for like what tax increases will bring in, probably, you know.
Yeah, because the only way anybody then criticises it is by asking the IFS to look at it. And then if you use their figures, then it becomes more difficult.
Going back to the aftermath of the general election, do we want to give a commiserations shout out to, two commiserations shout out to former Fight Club, both Nick Clegg and Tim Farron having a bit of a mare.
Double KO. It happens.
It's a callback.
So just tonight, Tim Farron has stood up and said that he basically wants to spend time following his
suit to being
homophobic. It's not compatible with being a leader of a liberal party.
He's you thought that was going to happen. Then his shadow or his home office spokesperson.
Yeah, it was Brian Paddock.
Yeah, Brian Paddock left today, and it was like, oh well, that's him leaving. That's done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many have they increased numbers?
Yes.
14.
14.
Is that? Oh no, 11.
It's 11.
11. Yeah, sorry, 11. So they were 14, and they were called 14 in the exit poll.
So
11.
It was up. What?
Up from
8.
Yeah. 9, sorry, because Sarah Olney.
She lost again.
And you're talking about Joe Swinson being leader. And
Joe Swinson's an absolute shoo-in for the next leader.
Yeah, but I think I mentioned last week that she blocked me on Twitter, and I remember why it was just before the podcast, which is she thinks that internships should be paid, but that workfare is okay. So I asked her about this in quite forceful language. She proceeded to block me.
I think it's interesting. Why. Yeah. I think it'll be more interesting to see who doesn't throw their hat for the Lib Dem. Because Norman Lamb keeps standing for leader and keeps not winning. And he's actually amazing on the health brief. He's made his whole reputation on that. Vince is back. Yeah. And it depends what, everybody loves Vince.
Who's better?
Vince handing out his Werther's Originals. Yeah. With economic policy in the inside. Yeah. I predicted the crash.
Fortune cookie.
Yeah.
The actually, I think if we focus more on the real economy, we'll do better overall. That's my Vince Cable impression. It's pretty fair.
Minus visual, it's all about ballroom dancing.
I'm going to say.
But yeah, Jo Swinson would be interesting. I think she's very competent. She's very good. She comes across well on TV. I do wonder if having been out for a period of time, I don't think it matters with Vince because he's got a huge public profile.
Yeah.
But with Joe Swinson, I don't know if that is going to count against
him. You're leader of the Lib Dems, you don't need a huge public profile.
No, that's true.
I mean,
well, that was the problem with him.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, she's not got a huge public profile now, but she's the sort of person that the media will love.
Yeah.
I think she's very much got the Ruth effect. She's young, she comes across as likeable in the media, even though I've been told by other people that she's not. and she's got, she's.
Aye, but Ruth, is she just one of the lads? Because I think there's an element to Ruth's likability that she does come across as being one of the lads at times as well.
Yeah, well, that's kind of in the context of being a Tory and standing up for Tory values, which you've got to have a lot of balls to be able to defend that kind of shit. Whereas the Lib Dems are a bit more nicey-nicey and a bit more friendly. She comes across very well on the telly. She does. When she was a minister, they put her on all the time on Question Time. And she performed really well. I do think she is a little bit... I don't want to use the term vacuous because people often use that in reference to women and it can be a bit misogynistic at times.
Yeah, but lightweight is a good
political
term. Term for saying. Yeah,
I don't think she'll do a lot to give weight to who the Lib Dems are and what they stand for because she doesn't really stand.
She's
for
She's a good interim. She's a good leader for what we need just now.
Yeah.
Which is someone who is good in interviews and won't be constantly asking about why they hate gay people.
Yeah.
Although if interviewers started asking her every turn why she thinks poor kids shouldn't get money and middle class kids should get money for internships, and that'd be fucking great.
She can't block John Humphreys. But I think, going back to the SNP one and what you were saying earlier, Jamie, I think it kind of has only kind of dawned on me recently about how little I feel like there's a kind of coherent kind of narrative or position behind the SNP altogether.
Yeah.
If you take away the independence point, then I do think I absolutely slagged him rotten when he said it, but the columnist who I disagree with on every fundamental point, Dan Hodges, Labour's, what was it? The cuckoo in the Labour nest or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember what he used to describe himself as. Unsurprisingly voted Tory. But anyway, he made the comparison between the SNP and New Labour a long time ago, and I was like, that is just absolute rubbish. That's absolute nonsense. But I absolutely
soft
see
left
that.
Populism.
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's a nod to wealthy landowners on one side.
Yeah.
It's a nod to business, particularly fossil fuels and things like that on another. Yeah. It's a bit of talk the talk about social democracy on the other side.
Yeah. So Jerry Hassan wrote a really good article this week saying exactly that
in
from Bella Caledonia. Yeah. Really good piece. Yeah, saying that they need to figure out what their mission is, and well, they need to start. Yeah. What was it? The title was "Build It and They Will Come." Yeah. So yeah,
yeah. I think I nicked my this 2014 moment thing from his article. I think it says it was on Bella anyway.
Yeah, yeah, but I know he makes a really good point that yeah, they need to start, and one of the reasons why there was such hope and positivity around the 2014 campaign was it was on the back of the SNP getting a majority in Holyrood and this idea that we could start building this better country that we want to see now with a future referendum, and they've just not done it. And your point around, yeah, trying to be all things to all people is totally right. So just this week in Holyrood, the SNP MSPs teamed up with Tory MSPs to relax the ban on tail docking in dogs, which the British Veterinary Association said that there was no justifiable reason to do it, and it came off the back of the lobbying of the Scottish Land and Estates Organisation, which is landowners and hunters and shooters. And
it's just a thing to the rural, to the farmer.
It is an absolute sop to the farming lobby and to these areas where they're not doing well at. And they think that because it happens in a committee, it won't get out, people won't report on it. But it's been picked up by the media, and it's certainly doing the rounds on social media. And I really hope people start to realise that the SNP aren't everything that they say they are.
No,
and
it's always been the thing, always been my thing with the SNP as well, is that, like, I've voted for them a fair few times now, sometimes because it's been the only option.
Absolutely.
I lost my way with Labour a long time ago now. The Greens, you know, I vote for them when I can, but most of the time there's not, it's that sort of thing. But the SNP, you're putting in a vote for them because, yeah, they're pro-Indy. The membership's very left. And yes, they have.
The membership have is so much more left than the parliamentary group.
They've got, you know, left socialist policies. But ultimately, they're about big business because they need to be about big business to do what they want to do. And I think that's the bit that jars. It just you've got this party that just constantly is jarring with itself, and it is like you say, New Labour and, you know, everything there is.
It's just all things to all people. Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily, like, obvious that being pro business is a bad thing. Like,
no,
literally, we need businesses, we need jobs, and all that kind of stuff. It's a virtuous cycle.
It's pro big business. Like, they're really into, you know, making big deals as well. Whether or not that jives with their socialist policies, that doesn't really matter. They'll just plow ahead.
And actually, what we need to do probably more in the kind of Scottish context is concentrate on, like, smaller businesses, like SMEs.
Yeah,
the thing that I was going to say about the SNP, and I've completely lost my way about what I was going to say. Yeah, fuck it. It'll come back to me. It'll come back. No, what I was going to say is, going back to that original point about the 2014 and the move about 2014, was it wasn't just always so much about what the SNP do. It was about the SNP seeming to be willing to be a partner, okay, the senior partner in a wider movement and coalition. Yeah. It was like you had the Greens, you had, like, things like the brief resurgence of, like, Radical Indy, you had like Rise, all this kind of stuff. Like, all those kind of, like, component parts seemed to be willing to come together and creating this kind of good vibe, good feel for Scotland. There was a kind of, in even after, and I think the one thing about post Indy Ref was everyone was like, we have to keep this momentum alive. Yeah. We've got to keep, and it's feels like, to me like that's, that's gone.
It was quite literally, but the feeling, like, you know, I think at the time was, it really was like, what's the quote? Live as if you're in
work as if you live in the early days of a better nation.
Yeah, and I think that actually summed up the feeling as well.
Yeah, totally.
As well. And I know that's sort of their calling call, but I tried to say as well, the SNP, I think that there's going to be a huge division. There's already a huge division between the membership and politicians in the SNP.
And the donors.
That, to me, is probably
the bigger...
Yeah.
It's going to get even worse. A lot of the SNP members I've spoken to say, you know, I say, so how did you get involved with the SNP? And he says, oh, well, it was the poll tax for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, did you join the SNP straight after that? And they're like, no, I only joined them like a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But they see that as, you know, that's how left-wing they are. But, you know, but they see that as the through line to what drove them towards independence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you know, anyway. Or my family was affected by a miner strike when I was young.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the SNP supporters I speak to seem to be older, actually.
And I think what's weird is there is that continuum to that period, but also there's like the 1980s Tartan Tories SNPs as well. And, I think that to me is... That to me is a bit odd. The reaction from London has been really interesting to me. Like certainly, like political commentators and things like that, and bits and pieces I've read and people I've spoken to. You know, there's real pride in like giving Nicola Sturgeon a bloody nose about this, and like the perception being that she had to hit those targets or not. And you know, this idea that that's it, independence is now completely stone dead, which. Actually, it's probably, it's definitely delayed.
Yeah.
And and that was a real difficult issue in the campaign.
Yeah.
Because, there, in fairness, credit to the Tories for painting them into a corner.
Yeah. But it's like you said even beforehand, the whole campaign became a referendum on the referendum, which should never have been.
No, it wasn't about that.
Do you think Nicola's on her way out? And if so, who would replace her?
I don't know. I don't know if she's on her way out because there was no way she was ever going to ride that high. I think she's possibly still, you know, doing well. I mean, I've not seen any sort of like opinion polls on her herself, but I don't know. I don't know who would replace her as well.
I think the problem is there's no one to replace her.
Mm-hmm. You've had some of the big hitters. Mm-hmm.
But maybe she wants to go away for a few years and then come back.
Gordon Brown should have done policy.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I have read a couple of interesting things that addressing critical pieces about the SNP saying that the relationship between her and her husband, both being at the top of the party, so he's chairman, he's been chairman for over 20 years now. And there apparently are some rumblings in the party and disquiet that between the two of them as a couple are making the decisions a lot of the time. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have any friends or contacts that are high up in the party.
Thinking that as well,
I mean, that's the thing that you forget is that, you know, yes, we had a change of leadership after the referendum, but it's been the same people controlling the SNP for a very long time now, and their membership has shifted an awful lot, but the people at the top haven't.
How do you think she would fare, she maybe goes away for a bit and comes back, but rather than looking at being, you know, leader, SNP, first minister or anything like that, but she goes to be... maybe leader of the West, you know, she gets a seat for Westminster.
Yeah. No, I don't, to be honest.
Do you think she would?
To be honest, I don't think she's going to step down anytime soon. I think Peter Murrell might step down as chairman, and I think that'd be a good idea. Mm. And I think they need to restructure internally and get a bit more young talent through internally. I think I would not be surprised if Humza Yousaf is the next leader of the SNP.
But he's
a few years away from being ready there. Also, he is extremely light and centrist on policies as well. And I don't think his appointment would necessarily be in line with the membership if wanting them to move more to the left.
Well, that's the thing of almost everybody I can think of in the SNP cabinet. Is more right wing than Nicola Sturgeon.
Ooh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's not going to solve this problem.
The chat is that she's one of the more socialist, she's got more socialist views, but actually can't move on them because of how centrist the party is.
It's okay.
And it's look at what's happened. Look at what has happened with Labour, you know, with these popular, you know, left policies. You know, is that what they need to do to try and, you know, they've been painted as a more left wing socialist party, yet here Labour coming along and suddenly becoming way more left than they are.
Here's something, and I totally take your point about expectations that you said earlier, and I think that's entirely correct. But at the same time, a lot of people are saying that Labour and both the Tories need to go more centre ground now.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that what I think a lot of people don't realise is that most of Corbyn's policies, if you actually ask people what they, you know, if they like them, are the centre ground of British politics.
Yeah.
Renationalisation is the centre, like in polls, it definitely is the actual centre ground.
Mm-hmm.
Might not what we call the centre ground in politics, but in terms of what people actually want.
Yeah.
And I'd like to point out Servation, the only company that got it right in 2015 and were pretty damn close to the vote share this time as well. had a poll out with Labour on 45 or 46% of the vote.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I know, holy shit.
I think from Labour's point of view, an October election would be a godsend. Who knows what's going to happen over the summer? None of us can be fucked in another election. We're all really tired. But I think it would be good news for Labour.
I think
it would be good news as well. Going back to the SNP point about like the people at the top as well. Like after IndyRef and things like that, you did lose, like, and Nicola Sturgeon came in and things. There were people like... Kevin Pringle, who's now lobbyist and columnist and things like that, was one of the strategists previously. I know he was pretty well regarded there. Like, there was, I've forgotten what his name was, that was the Alex Salmond's chief of staff as well, who got through an absolute power of work as well. I remember watching a documentary where he was talking. And it seems like a couple of those people were kind of lost and there was a bit of talent there. And I know that people have been really critical of Derek Mackay, who ran the election, also ran the local election as well. I think there's been some criticism there as well.
And just the last point on that, they have brought in some young talent after the referendum, but it was people who worked on the referendum campaign. And it's no surprise, based on that, that their strategy is around continuing to win another referendum. And to win a referendum, you need broad appeal across the board.
It's people like Gary Dunne, you
know. Gary worked for the Greens.
No, not Gary Dunne. Yeah.
And he's at Friends of the Earth.
Ross
Colquhoun. Yeah. So, exactly. So it's no surprise that their continuing strategy is to be all things to all people, but the SNP are not and should not be a referendum campaign group. They're a political party and they need to have clear lines on what they stand for. And I think the public are starting to realise that those lines aren't very clear.
I think absolutely the case. They also just chose Ian Blackford as their leader at Westminster as well, which is interesting. Cause
I know nothing about him.
All I know about him is in his political past, him and Alex Salmond used to hate each other.
He almost threatened
legal action against him.
But apparently they've made up in the last couple of years, so it's all right now. But I mean, again, but in terms of like people that it was sad to see lose in the general election, Alex Salmond obviously one of them,
and Angus Robertson,
obviously, as well. Yeah. Trying to think of other good people who lost their seats, but it's not immediately obvious.
Well, down south, you did have Clegg disappearing as well.
Yeah, do you know what?
Oh, he looked so sad. His wee face.
And you know what? There was a time, 2010, when he certainly seemed to rally a good bit of the voting public, and you know, obviously he got all those seats at that time.
But you know why Nick Clegg's lost a seat? Because this has been the biggest youth turnout in a general election for a whole generation, and it's a direct result of their conceding on the tuition fees thing. Though he looked really sad and was going to cry and all that, it is his comeuppance. It's students, and his constituents is a large student population, and they're turning around to say, "Do you know what? You lied to us."
I remember those first leader debates that we had on TV at that time.
I agree, Nick.
The three of them, and between bloody Gordon Brown and David Cameron, you know, they were just it was the same old shit that they were peddling at that point. And then you had Nick Clegg, who was coming in, and he actually kind of seemed to have a bit of a clearer vision of something. And I think that did, you know, capture a lot of people's imagination. And he certainly, you know, seemed to be a very interesting politician. Just
brilliant on Europe. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant on Europe. Very few people know the pro-European case.
Got into bed with the wrong people, basically.
In the end, it was a lesson why liberalism shit.
Yeah.
That's Jamie's entire view on it.
Communism is inevitable.
Yeah. If he'd had a historical materialist perspective, it would have been much better.
Is that you calling the entire relationship? Liberalism.
Corbyn has a historical materialist perspective. That's why he did better than Clegg. That's it.
Wise words.
Well, I think that's probably a good time to pull it. I was actually thinking we would maybe only talk about this for maybe 15 minutes or so, but we've gone on for a good 25-30 minutes, so if not more.
Put us around the table and ask us to talk about politics.
Yeah,
I know, it's almost like the pub.
Before we go any further, I'm just going to bring in some kind of breaking news to the podcast. Right back towards the start when we did our very first Fight Club.
Jamie brought two contenders, two actual fighters, to the rounds, and that was Conor McGregor and Floyd Money Mayweather. And we kind of talked about the fact that they had at the time been talking about actually having a fight, MMA versus boxing. And we were kind of, the opinion was never going to happen.
Yeah.
Even though at that point there was
Jamie's prediction. I'm like Mystic Meg, I'm always wrong.
Yeah, because the breaking news is we've both had Conor McGregor and Mayweather come out and confirmed that there is a fight now for the 26th of August.
And this has been said a lot in the last few months, but it's Kevin Ioli saying it, who's...
No, they've both come out.
Have they come out now? Because Kevin Ioli reported it.
Quite literally breaking.
Because Kevin Ioli is, I think he's quite literally in the Boxing Hall of Fame, and he's a journalist. So, you know, shows how good he is.
So who did you decide back in the early Hall of Fame? Who did you say would win?
Oh, McGregor, because Mayweather's a cunt.
Yeah, well, in reality, we all think Floyd Mayweather will deck him.
It's under boxing rules. Yeah. So Mayweather, how old is Mayweather? Is he 49?
50? 50.
Is he 50, 51? Somewhere. He's one of the best boxers to ever live. One of the best defensive boxers to ever live, if not the best. And McGregor's probably not going to get near him. But I want to put a bet on it. I'm sure Bookies will be doing this, that at some point in the fight, Conor McGregor will just kick him in the head.
not be able to control himself.
It's a sad day for... Boxing's having such a fucking great year.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of fights, they're having a much better year than other combat sports are. Mm-hmm. And this is just a big money grab, and it's going to ruin MMA's reputation, and it's going to... People are going to be disappointed because it'll probably be a shit fight.
Yep.
Mm. So it's bad for combat sports in general, but I'm still probably going to buy
it. Yeah, we will get together and watch it.
So this is the extent of my combat sports knowledge. Uh-huh. Will this be like the time that Freddie Flintoff took up boxing?
Almost.
I think that was the last boxing fight I watched, because I was just like, really? There's a guy that plays cricket who's now going to be a boxer?
Don't forget his job as a... promoting Jacob. The brand for big lads.
So cricketer and model and boxer, Freddie Flintoff.
Do you know what? I think I was only telling Jamie this possibly last week, or I don't know, I can't remember what it is, but only within the last year did I realise that there weren't Flintoff brothers. I thought that Freddie and Andrew were brothers, and never really figured out that they were one in the same person.
Like Ian and Duncan Smith.
I'd only ever heard their names separately and not following cricket or anything. I just assumed that they were...
And they look a lot like each other. Yeah.
But then again, I never really paid much attention. It was just two names that I heard and I was like, they must be brothers.
So when I was on Pointless a few years ago, Andrew Flintoff was actually one of the answers that we gave. Uh-huh. It was one of these ones, it was multiple choice. It was famous Lancastrians, which I don't even know where Lancaster is. Turns out that's where my family are from, but it's English geography, whatever. But it was photos and you had to pick them, and literally the only one that we knew was Andrew Freddie Flintoff. And so we said Andrew Flintoff, but Lizzie texted me afterwards saying she was shouting at the telly going, "No, his name's Freddie, you idiots!" So, she thought that they were different people as well.
Well, easy mistake to make, apparently. So yeah, but batshit fight. Don't know.
Is this, Jamie, the moment that MMA jumps the shark?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because it's been riding a crest for a while.
Yeah, it's had a shit year this year. Had a great year last year. And now, I think, they're desperate. They're okay money-wise, but they're owned by WME, who are probably going to have an IPO next year, so they probably want good annual returns at least.
Yeah.
So it'll be the biggest pay-per-view of all time. It'll be bigger than Mayweather Pacquiao by a fucking huge... It'll do like 4 million pay-per-view buys.
If not more.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw one.
But is, you're like, definitely right, Pim, and that is exactly what this is.
Jumping the shark.
Yeah. And do you know what? I'll probably watch it with you.
I've not heard that expression before. What does jumping the shark mean?
It comes from Happy Days.
It does.
Which I didn't know until just the other year, but there's an episode of Happy Days where Fonz, like...
He's on a jet ski.
He's on a jet ski and he, like, jumps a shark.
Yeah.
And, like, that was like, you know, Fonz always does ridiculous things, like taps things and they fall apart, or snaps his fingers, jukebox comes on, and they upped it and upped it, and he did that, and everybody thought it was so bad that that's now become a term for when things are terrible, that they jumped the shark.
Where they take something just too far, and then you can't go back.
That is a good expression, and I like the Etymology slash etymology.
What are those about verbs?
I always get them mixed up.
I thought they were about large trees that walked places. Anyway.
Tolkien pun there for you.
Yeah. I can't
do that. Right, I'm calling that one.
So yeah, that's breaking news for you. Thought it might be interesting, since we've talked about it before. A long.
Still hope Floyd Mayweather gets panelled.
Yeah, that's the hope.
For women.
Always the hope.
Basically.
I had a wee topic that I was going to bring up, but I might save it because we're pushing on.
Do it, Kutch. Get it done.
Well.
Get it off your hairy chest.
You want to see that? No! Well, it was really something that's definitely in our wheelhouse, and we've talked about several different types, and we've had a few fights of these things, but I thought I would just ask you guys, what is your favourite biscuit?
Oh,
I have really strong opinions about this.
I think we all do.
Well, who's going first?
I don't even know. I'm literally working my way through the many biscuits that
okay.
I enjoy.
Okay.
I have a few, but I'll call mine already as bourbon.
Right. Ooh, so yeah. I'm going to say that biscuits are rubbish and pointless, and I never eat biscuits. They're dry and they're disappointing. And why would
you? Bit like you, Max. How dare you slap your biscuits?
That was a good one. Sorry. So my boyfriend Craig absolutely fucking loves biscuits. Aww. I think he
because
would say
he's a good man.
I think he would say
a right thinking individual.
He actually cannot. If he buys a packet of biscuits, he has to eat the entire packet of biscuits.
That's
he will happily eat 12 biscuits.
A problem with
a biscuit.
I just find them eternally disappointing. They stick to your mouth. Now possibly it's because I don't really drink a lot of tea, and when I do drink
I drink
black tea and I don't put milk in it, and
see,
I certainly don't dunk a biscuit. Well then, how do you get over the dryness of it?
I don't know. Look, I'm a man who doesn't have sauce on his bacon sandwich.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah, actually, why am I even asking you?
I'm all about the raw essence of flavour. I'm going to jump on Jamie's bourbon bandwagon, because actually, if I was given, like, a couple of quid to buy a pack of biscuits, mm-hmm. and it was just whatever I wanted, that is a strong go-to biscuit. I love, as you know, Kutch, and we recently bought them. Yeah. I bought them and gave you one.
A trio was a treat.
Biscuits just almost remind me of either.
Not even a chocolate biscuit, like, you know, a Kit Kat or a Clamp or something that has a bit more, less dry. No.
I'd rather have a bar of chocolate. If I've had my lunch and I'm wanting a wee sweet treat, I will have a bar of chocolate. I like a bar of chocolate.
Would you have a Twix?
No, because the biscuit bit ruins it. It's really dry.
Try to figure out if there's biscuits in something.
Yeah.
Would you consider Twix a chocolate bar or a biscuit?
It's a chocolate bar to me.
It's a chocolate bar.
It's got more chocolate on it than biscuit. Yeah. Biscuits remind me of either being at the houses of people that I don't want to have to go and see, being made to go and visit them with my mum. So, like, being a kid and having to go and see people from church, or going to see my gran, or going to see my gran's friends, and them just putting out a plate of biscuits, and it's like, this is not going to make it better that I have to be here right now.
See, it always made it better for me.
Especially for me, it was like, biscuits. Right. My gran's would be like, oh, biscuits. Are you bringing fucking... I have a glass bottle as well, the best kind of thing.
And especially if there was, like, your gold bars or penguins or something.
Gold bars was very much the call of the day at my great grand's house.
Or a wagon wheel.
Wagon wheels are dreadful.
No, wagon wheels are just
like jam, wagon wheels
jam saves
for,
it. But
when you worked at Deep Sea World, were the only thing you could knit because we didn't keep track of. Is everybody on the way? Keep wagon wheels.
That's because you kept trying to leave with an octopus in your pocket.
You said the only thing you couldn't nick.
Only thing that wasn't nailed down. What? Cruelty, Deep Sea World shocker. They're nailing their race to the floor.
Every night Jamie walks out with a tiger shark in his pocket.
That's how they keep the sharks there, because otherwise he'd swim out into the fourth. That's how it works.
Jamie working at Deep Sea World, another time, another place.
In the cafe. Everything you talk about, Jamie's got a Deep Sea World story to go along with it.
I do.
Do you know, like, a former podcast pod guest, Kenneth Young, used to briefly work at Deep Sea World until he got sacked for being terrible at doing face painting. Somebody couldn't do it for one day. They were like, "Ken, do you want to? Can you help us out with this?" He's like, "Sure, I'll give it a bash."
She poke some children in the eye.
Crying at like some kind of like mess on their face.
They asked me to do it once, and I was like, "You don't. I can't even. I can hardly write my own fucking name. Never been face paint. Jesus
color,
Christ.
Color dripping off the face like a sad clown."
I seem to remember. You know Liam Allen.
Yeah.
Was he working there when you worked there? Because I'm sure I remember a story. He got employed. He was at art school and he got employed over the summer to take photographs of people. And he got sacked for just being too miserable all the time. People kept complaining that he wasn't having enough fun. But I don't know if that's actually true or not.
Wow. There's only probably so much fun you can have in an aquarium once you've seen everything a few times.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be getting in with those fucking sharks no matter what. Like,
always the hot girls that got picked for that from the start. Funnily enough.
Tight wetsuit going in the tank.
Pretty much.
I don't think the world would be ready to. Actually, no, at that age, you would have been all right in a wetsuit. But
yeah, not now.
Not now. The world doesn't need to see you in a wetsuit.
Yeah. It's not a good sight.
I'm going to come back to the biscuit conversation.
Okay, sorry.
Beyond Jamie dripping wet. Like I say, another 4 likes for a Facebook page and somebody can take Jamie home. That offer's still on there, guys.
Oh, that's gonna equal minus likes.
But yeah, I'm gonna call Kutch just because there needs to be a strong campaign to make sure they come back. But I'm calling Trio.
I'm gonna call a Trio.
So I'm gonna say that for comic relief this year, Richard Osman did a very good World Cup of Biscuits on Twitter. I'm trying to remember now what won.
I think Bourbon got pretty far.
Bourbon did get pretty far, but no, it was. Was it a Hobnob or a chocolate digestive?
Chocolate digestive, I can understand as the consensus.
Yeah.
See, I was...
So it's a consensus biscuit.
That's what I think,
I would put my hat down on a chocolate digestive, especially a dark chocolate digestive. Oh.
No.
Just have a bit of dark chocolate. Why do you need to ruin it with dry biscuit?
Because it's nice, sweet and tasty.
What about Foxy's Crunch Cream? That's always...
Oh, Crunch Cream.
What's that? I don't know that.
Hold on. See,
there's something similar to that, which... my mum used to get when I was a kid. It was like, I think we used to call them lemon curds, but I just Google search for it and they look very
custard
different.
Custard creams?
They were, no, right, so they were like custard creams, but they were lemon in the middle.
All right,
and they
it was
brown sugary thing on the outside, and they were fucking fantastic.
I know exactly what you mean. They were delicious, but I don't remember them at all.
Yeah.
It's like
we called them lemon curds, but I don't guess what we're calling them packet, but...
Maybe I'm just... got shit biscuits
actually,
as a kid, and that's just scarred me for life. I don't know.
The dark chocolate covered biscuit to beat all biscuits is the Borders dark chocolate gingers.
Not very nice. Yeah.
Right. Okay. If I'm gonna have a biscuit, a Borders biscuit is a superior kind of biscuit.
Oh,
I have to admit,
it is.
I'm missing since I moved house earlier
cookies. Oh.
The Transy shop. I used to live next to the Transy shop in Dunfermline, and they had the full selection of Borders biscuits. They had a whole shelf that had all the different Borders biscuits on it, and they were pretty good. I would sometimes buy them as a treat, and I'm missing being able to go get them.
So now we've won her over to a biscuit.
A Borders biscuit.
It's more
like a little cake. A Borders biscuit, really.
We used to get them in our office all the time, but actually I thought they were overrated.
The dark chocolate ginger is definitely one of the...
Oh, well, chocolate and ginger don't go together.
That sounds like a porn.
Yeah, exactly.
Dark chocolate and ginger, just the chocolate cookies that the Borders do, that are like, they're like a chocolate chip cookie and they're dipped in chocolate as well. They are pretty good. Yeah.
What's people's opinions on the American...
No, it's not a biscuit.
What, an Oreo?
Oh, no, I thought you were going to say biscuits. Because they call biscuits and gravy.
Yeah,
biscuits and gravy.
So basically, Americans call...
I meant the American contender that's coming and started bullying its way across here.
I like a double stuffed.
A double stuffed Oreo,
I cannot... I hate the normal ones, but double stuffed I find okay. I feel with the normal ones, I always feel cheated. Like, this is before you had double stuffed one. There's not enough stuff in between.
Yeah, totally.
There's not enough.
That is too dry a biscuit, yeah, Mags. Yeah. I agree.
I have never had an Oreo, so I don't really know what he's on about. No. But if it's American, I probably won't like it.
See, my cultural one.
I like it. If it's American, I won't like
no,
it.
No, I don't.
I just know.
Yeah, I am a total cultural snob like that. Yeah.
Well, my cultural snobbery comes when, you know, when you first encounter Australians. Like, it just happens. Like, you're in a new job. You're in Edinburgh or London or something like that, you encounter Australians and they go, have you ever had a Tim Tam? And you go, no, I've never had a Tim Tam. And they go, it is the best biscuit in the world. So you're like, all right, fine. They're like, you bite off both corners.
Drink your teeth through it.
It's like, okay, fine. That sounds messy. I don't want chocolatey fingers or, you know. Anyway, and then eventually you have a Tim Tam.
And
you
just penguin.
Like, it's a shit penguin. This is a retrograde penguin. Like, a penguin is basically a fancy bourbon in a chocolate coat.
Anytime anybody tries to big up a Tim Tam, I'm just like, it's just a penguin.
It's absolutely shite.
Would we consider a Tunnock's tea cake a biscuit? Because for me, that's in like it's like a tea cake. It's more like it's more like a Jaffa cake than it is a biscuit.
There is a hinterland.
You would have it with a cup of tea, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So if
I was going to have a Tunnock's tea cake, I would eat the marshmallow bit and leave the biscuit bit at the bottom because it's too dry. However, a snowball where you don't have the biscuit on it—that is amazing. I do like a Tunnock's snowball with the coconut and everything on it, and no biscuit ruining it.
I prefer a snowball, but also, what's your technique for eating a Tunnock's tea cake? Because I do the opposite. I bite off the biscuit, eat that first, and then eat the.
I tried to bite off the chocolate on the top, and then somehow, and I never do it, but I always try to separate the biscuit from the marshmallow. Not even marshmallow, eat that, and then try it, and I have like a dirty hand.
That is the best description of it, is in the end, I have a dirty hand. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm gonna do it one day, right? I'm gonna fucking do it. I don't know how.
We're doing this as a special video for Fight Club.
I did come. I did do well. I left that because you can leave like one corner of a biscuit and use that to hold it and just eat it in a oneer with the marshmallow at the end. And then it's okay.
I don't even know what you're trying. I can't even imagine this.
You're not equipped for this level of dainty eating as well. It's like it's not it's like sitting at high tea at the Ritz or something.
Like, with this beard, candy floss is a no-no. I've tried it and it just doesn't work.
Bubblegum?
It's
danger.
I haven't actually had bubblegum for years.
That's a follow up to the
video we need to do.
These videos of Jamie eating things. Yeah.
How messy can we get Jamie's beard?
Now, you were talking earlier about needing checks, needing revenue streams. This sounds like the kind of shit you can make money off of on the right websites.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some perverts out there. Funnily enough, they're not liking our Facebook page, though.
What?
To win that date with you, though, Jamie.
What the fuck?
Yeah, crazy.
So if you want a date with Jamie,
I'll
wear a wedding.
I've got one through there. I'll be wearing mine when I'm on holiday.
Oh, a cold chill.
Is that a wetsuit or a reference to your early 2000 scuba jacket that you used?
No, it's a genuine wetsuit.
Your neoprene scuba jacket.
I love my neoprene jacket.
Did you have a wetsuit on when you went for a swim in the Union Canal last year?
No, you just
did
went
we all
for
put
a swim.
Wetsuits on? No, did we just got we just
did,
got
no, we did have wetsuits.
Did we have wetsuits on? Yeah.
Oh god, there might be photographic evidence.
I think there might be photos of Jamie in a wetsuit. Before he went for a swim in the Union Canal.
And
with his phone in his pocket.
I have a funny feeling I've seen a picture of you in a wetsuit.
I think it accentuates my Dr. Robotnik body that I've got. You know. Yeah.
Anyway.
Come swing my ball at you.
So, are we...
something that tight.
We're quite happy that we want to see Jamie eat a ton of tea.
Yes.
I think that's a vox pop that we could do.
Yeah. I think so.
Do you know, the on the tea cake point, one of the most like vile and horrible things I have ever seen anybody do was at Shona and Beatty's wedding.
Oh yeah,
that was
awful, disgusting how they got married.
Anyway, it's the point where I objected, where nobody.
But yeah. Anyway, on with the podcast. It's Shona's little brother, John, his other half, was going round and taking... Everybody had a Tunnett's tea cake.
Oh,
with
yeah,
their
yeah.
name. That's how they did their placeholders. It's a Tunnett's tea cake with a wee flag through the case. Well, what
was
they
that
were
a
doing,
Union Jack?
No, it was just that.
Ian would not have liked that.
But yeah, what she was doing was she was undoing the bottom of the wrapper very carefully, taking the Tunnett's tea cake out, eating it, and then putting it back and putting
That's
it down on people's...
What's she doing that?
Yeah.
See, what a cheeky bitch.
See, if it was me and I went to take my tea cake and it was empty, I think I would go through all the motions
yeah,
of
the
grief.
Stages of grief. Yeah,
yeah. Like... Yeah. Within probably about 40 seconds and somebody might get punched.
Speaking of, I had the classic mince bread instead of a steak bready just the other day.
Oh no.
My dad came back and came in and went, oh, I've been Stevens. And I went, oh great. Served it up to me. And then I was like, oh, took a bite out of it. Mostly pastry. Took a second bite and I was like, no, oh god no. And he went, oh yeah, we don't have any steak left. Oh, I was like, oh god no.
You drive to the next you drive, George.
Do you know what? I don't mind it so long as I'm prepared
yeah.
for it.
But if you don't know and you take
a
bite
shock.
And you
it's
go
it's
in. Although there is always, you know, if it's got the three lines or the whole, if it's the whole then it's, yeah, but you know.
I'd be happy to do a review of a mince and onion bready because I've never had one.
You're definitely a true Stevens fan, that is definitely something
they are good. If you're expecting it, it's fine, but if it's it's the ultimate,
I really love
fun.
Onion like yeah. basically
they're very
oniony.
They are really onion.
But imagine if I had a child and it got shot, right? This is what it would feel like. Maybe
but you could always have another kid,
it's
right?
Yeah, exactly. You can always have another kid.
You can't always drive to the Nether Stevens.
Yeah.
You've got the bus. There's not another 19 for like 40 minutes.
And there is a plethora of Stevens in town.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is disappointing.
They've still not sponsored us.
No. One day. One day.
One day.
Yeah. Maybe we need to contact them.
Instead of just praying that they stumble across our podcast. Yeah.
Although I have badgered them on Twitter a couple of times, so yeah.
Well, there you go. You can make a video of marketing a steak mince brady and share it with them. Get them to share it.
Yeah.
And then
shareable
make
kids.
As Mark goes, oh, this is horrible.
It would be really interesting to find out their sales stats. How many mince brides they sell compared to how many steak brides they sell.
Yeah,
because this could be a good marketing strategy for them to upsell their mince brides. Because I bet the mince brides are cheaper to produce. Because it's all arse and elbow rather than quality premium steak. As in
quality
steak
arse and elbow.
So, yeah,
they wanted to sponsor us. It's Aberdeen Angus. Those cows are reared in the best conditions. Cuts plays classical music to them sometimes.
All the time.
Yeah.
Stroke them. Whatever.
They like Bach.
Lovely. Well, that came to an end then.
Yeah. Fringe. So yes, so it's the week of the year where they publish all the brochures for the Fringe Festival. Mm. And I always think that actually it's one of the best things about living in Fife is that you can go to the Fringe, but you don't have to pay the ridiculous prices of staying in Edinburgh or put up with tourists all the time, and you can get back and escape to Fife as and when you feel the need to.
Escape to Fife. Wait a minute. We're in one of the greatest cities in the world with the world's largest international arts festival. Let's go back to Fife. Come on.
Well,
come on, get to the Waterhole.
So this is the thing about Fringe.
R.I.P.
Waterhole. I know. Oh, God, don't get me started on that.
Hurts.
But no, this is the thing. I love the Fringe and I hate the Fringe in equal measures. Like, it's amazing. And there's so many awesome shows from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And we're incredibly lucky to have this on our doorstep. And you get to preview a lot of things before the rest of the world gets to see them. But also, there's far too much on. And it's really difficult. Like, just tonight, I was like, oh, I'll have a browse through the Fringe brochure and pick out some things. And right away, I was like, there is too much. I don't know who these people are. I have fear of choosing the wrong show and spending £8 on a show that I don't like. And it's really stressful. And all the good shows, the tickets go really early and stuff like that. And then there's just the physicality of being in Edinburgh on the Fringe, where you are shoulder to shoulder up against people all the time. And you have to pay £6 for a pint and someone steals your passport.
I have to say,
Oh my god, it's just like living in London.
It is,
yeah,
exactly.
Welcome to London, you guys.
Yeah, that's the thing. I like London for a couple of days, but I don't want to live there. But basically, yeah, Edinburgh's like that for all of August.
But I don't mind that. I like going over. I love the feeling, the feel of the festival when you go across. The place is just buzzing, and it's infectious, and you feel it. And you know, I don't go across a lot. Maybe 2 or 3 times if I'm lucky, and. It's just, sometimes I'll just go across with, like, I've got across before my camera and not gone to see anything, just myself, and I'll just wander about and just soak it up because there's just so much going on. So many people, so much, just people having a good time as well.
See, I agree. I absolutely love it. Like, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
No,
it's one of the best things about living in Scotland. Hilariously, it's also
one of the best things
about
living here.
Yeah. But it's also one of the things that that West Coast of Scotland people just absolutely pretend doesn't happen.
I went to the Fringe. Well, I went to various Edinburgh things as a teenager, a young person as a teenager. Moved to Glasgow for 5 years, never went to the Fringe once. I only went to Edinburgh like once, and it was to do research for my dissertation. And that was
why are you going to Edinburgh? What's in Edinburgh?
Like, literally, none of my friends in Glasgow would ever go to the Fringe, or would, you're right, they just pretend it didn't happen.
You give a lot in Glasgow, but think Glasgow is the entire universe.
Yeah.
Much more than you do in Edinburgh, actually.
But then that is the old Edinburgh-Glasgow divide, isn't it?
So has anybody got any recommendations for the festival this year? Has anyone had a chance to have a look at it?
I haven't, but I was just going to briefly say that I understand your level of anxiety, but quite often I have friends that are coming up from like London or something like that, and I feel the anxiety to pick for them.
It's so difficult picking. Like, it's just, how do you choose? What? Like, I when you get recommendations from a friend or someone takes you to see something that you would never normally go and see. That's quite fun.
You need to do. I more these days. I'm doing the free Fringe.
I was just going to say this is like
because
like
there's
you,
not because
you and me have done some great days over there where we go across and we'll maybe have enough money to see one fully paid show.
Yeah, some maybe two, but usually just one. And we just go to free Fringe rest.
Yeah, or we've decided. We've picked up tickets for Andy Zaltzman or something like that. We'll go across, see him, and then it's instead of spending your money on tickets, spend your money on some drink, and then you pop a pound or two in
the
that's
free
all, that's
Fringe.
That's all they want.
I've seen some really shit stuff at the free Fringe.
Yeah, but it's either funny because it's shit, or it's funny because it's funny. So you win either way. Yeah. And if it is shit, and you have more money to spend on beer, so it doesn't matter as much.
You don't have to give them anything. You know,
I saw one of the best, Johnny Wheelabin.
Johnny Wheelabin and Johnny F. Monotone.
Johnny F. Monotone, yeah.
And the other guy.
The guy who was a wrestler. And a sir, and aristocrat, and Olympic wrestler.
And that was...
Johnny F. Monotone, demotivational speaker, really been enthusiast. he handed us... Yeah. He was sitting... It was about... This was one of his days in Edinburgh. It was about 30 degrees. It was
really warm.
Really roasting. Jim with his factor 50 on, obviously. And he was standing in a full trench coat with a hat on, massive beard. With a wheelie bin, looking metal, with a rubbish picker-upper. Handing out his flyers. And just looked at us badly and handed us a flyer. We're going to
and
this.
It was almost like sold straight away.
Yeah.
And it was bloody, bloody good. Yeah. We've just seen some really good stuff on the Free Fringe.
Basically, if you want good things to go see at the Fringe, if you go to the Stand, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the good comedians just go to the Stand because the comedy festival.
Yeah.
Charges punters more and doesn't give that much more to most comedians, only to the top ones, whereas the Stand get better deals for comedians and for punters. So
absolutely, it makes sense. One thing I really hate about the Fringe though is fire jugglers and fucking unicyclists,
street entertainers,
and human statues all can just fuck off. Like,
there's a lot of interpretive dance and like one man theatre and stuff like that. I mean, basically we generally just go to see comedy stuff and the occasional sort of spoken word or something like that, but I think over the years we've gradually learnt how to filter through the programme and pick the good stuff. Whereas if you were coming to this fresh and you were looking at this,
it's
like
too much, you don't know what fuck to do.
£2,000 page booklet, where do you start?
Usually I look at what you quite often get, because a lot of them have been at Melbourne already. So I look at what comedians have said and what they like. Daniel Kitson usually actually puts out a list on his email of, but most of that's not comedy, most of it's theatre shows that he liked. And another good place used to be, it's not as active anymore, but it's still a place, is Cooked and Bombed, the Chris Morris and Peter Cook fan site. Mm-hmm. Their comedy forums usually have fairly good tips for what's good at the Fringe.
What's good, yeah. I think we've talked about going across and having a club day over over and seeing if we can go mobile with the podcast for a day over in Edinburgh and try and get some vox pops with some folk and maybe try and annoy some comedians and see if we can get
generally get ourselves arrested.
Yeah, yeah. just see if we
get
can maybe
get ourselves arrested.
Now I know obviously already we have promised big things in the past and never followed through on them, but I think this is something that's potentially that, you know, that we can do. It's on our doorstep. It would be silly for us not to actually try and do something. So yeah, that's a wee sizzle for something that we're thinking of.
I just want to say, listeners, Kutch said we might do some things on election night, and he did actually mention to me about 2 a.m. I think.
Yeah.
Do you want to do some stuff? And I went, maybe in a bit, because at that point I was feeling quite tired, and I thought maybe a bit, and I just forgot.
And then it just didn't happen.
And I had to go home.
But we did say we weren't promising. So,
it's my fault, listeners.
But I think that would be something that we can easily do because we'll go across.
At the very least, we're going to try and flyer it.
Yeah,
we'll go across and record in like the first two pubs that we go to and then get drunker and drunker
and then lose the recording.
We'll lose the stuff, or you'll get paranoid about spilling pints on it and things like that, or we will just forget what we're doing and end up on the night bus steaming back to Dunfermline having recorded like 5 minutes, and all you can hear is like glasses and tables and pints and people in the background.
Do you know what? Still put it out.
Sounds good. So,
probably better than most of our stuff.
Yeah. We'll just go to Edinburgh, get steaming, and see if we feel like recording.
Because
getting steaming is, and watching stuff at the Fringe is just so good.
It's very true. Very true. Yeah. Well, is that your little rant about the Fringe over as well?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be quite so ranty tonight.
No, that's fine.
You invite me on your podcast, and I'm going to rant.
It's why you're here.
You get a good quality rant from me.
We do like a rant. We have not done a Fife Club Hall of Fame in quite some time.
There was a reason for that.
Because Mag's ruined it for us.
Yeah.
Well, I did right. Okay, so I maybe posted a slightly critical comment on Facebook to say I really enjoyed the Fife Hall of Fame features, but it did start to descend into just people just... There's a page on Wikipedia called Famous People from Fife, and you were basically alphabetically working your way through that.
We were not alphabetically, the most interesting stories that we hadn't heard of.
Okay,
and we were teaching the rest of the people in the group about them. So,
who haven't read their Wikipedia.
Yeah. Well, I would kind of envisage maybe more the Fife Hall of Fame would be more like a celebration of people from Fife who've contributed to social or cultural life or political life in the country that other people might not realise are from Fife. So, and then maybe the group could share their reflections and thoughts on how these people have influenced their lives and why they're a respected Fifer and why we're proud to say that they're from Fife. So I'd kind of thought that that's maybe what the Fife Hall of Fame would be.
You don't know what it... Yeah, exactly. You don't know what it's like to do 10 minutes of preparation.
You can't just read a page of Wikipedia, but yes, that's...
We put it in our own words, Max.
Anyway, but I was just thinking, actually, there's quite a lot of sort of contemporary or in recent history, people from Fife who've really influenced our lives. And I think we should be like, I'm proud that they're Fifers. Uh-huh. So the last time I came on, I had a really good one. But actually, then since then, it was Craig. I have to say thanks to Craig.
He's entering a Fife Hall of Fame.
No. He reminded me.
Craig Buckin, welcome to the Fife Club. Like, he's not been in Fife long, but this is good.
So he reminded me of this. There's actually three people that I'm going to induct, I'm allowed to induct into the Fife Hall of Fame. And given
triplets?
No, but they are the one entity. And I thought it was quite relevant given we're talking about the Fringe and we're talking about prominent cultural, members of the cultural sphere. Mm-hmm. And these are people that I know for sure have influenced all of us, particularly around about our musical tastes and our musical things and our upbringing.
I know where this is going.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you want to?
I know exactly what this is doing.
Is it the guy from Third Base Records?
F-I-C-T-A. Can't do it for laughing. Spout. handle of metal. What's inside the singing kettle? So I genuinely think that the singing kettle have probably had more influence on people of our generation than any other people in the cultural sfere that have come from Fife.
I'm just going to say something. What? Mark, do you have a controversial thing about the singing kettle?
Very much.
I knew it.
I detested the singing kettle. There was nothing more cruel than, like, when you go to some, like, it's like a, you know, your play date sort of thing. You like, you go round to, like, this person's family's house and stuff like that. Like, treat for you tonight. I'm like, all right, okay, cool. Cinema, McDonald's. We're going to the singing kettle. I'm like, oh my God, we're not going to the singing kettle. This is fucking terrible. So, first of all, it's fucking terrible. And second of all, what kind of message is this sending out to children in a health and safety context? What's inside the singing kettle? It's boiling, scalding hot water. Do you want to still have fingers? Like, seriously, what are you doing? Well, like, the children of Fife might utterly maimed with no hands. Stumps trying to pick up cups of tea.
Gary would be able to play his instrument.
Oh, exactly.
Do you know their names? Do you know all their names?
Archie and Gary.
It's RT actually. I always thought it was Archie.
It is RT.
Yeah. And RT and Cilla were actually married. Yeah. I wasn't quite sure about that. And their daughter joined the band for a while.
And they also, the daughter and her partner, also did a side project called The Runaway Train.
Did not know that.
And it was very much the same.
They retired.
About safety issues in the locomotive.
They just encouraged kids to run onto rail tracks.
They did a road safety themed show, because I was just in the Wikipedia. It lists all the different shows that they did. And they also did a side branch of, they did a road safety one. They did one about oral hygiene as well, which I need to tell Lizzie about. There was one about cleaning your teeth. And then there was another one. There was a third one that was like a public safety message, which was a little bit more rubbish. I can't remember.
Putting your hand inside boiling, scalding water.
Climbing
over rail tracks. Would you trust these masochists to put on some kind of health and safety?
It was the most. Did they ever come to your school?
Yeah.
The day that they came to our school was the most fun ever. And this is at Craig. They even went to Shetland.
Mm-hmm.
They went around all the schools in Scotland.
Never went to our school, but I saw them.
To be fair, that's like Aerosmith turning up in Shetland.
Exactly. Like, it was the best day ever. But especially when they came to Kincardine as well. And it was so cool that we had these celebrities in your school and they sang songs with you. Mm-hmm. And also it turns out that there's lots of YouTube videos of people who've played this, like one person in particular who clearly has the full collection of singing kettle videos, and they've played them on their old VCR and recorded it on their phone of the screen and then uploaded it onto YouTube. I spent quite a lot of time watching that this evening.
My little sister used to call it on the telly on our videos the wee singing kettle, because she thought we were actually like wee people. And then we're going to go see the big singing kettle live.
And where are the singing kettle from?
Kettle.
Well, King's Kettle. I don't think people from, if you were from out with Fife, I don't think you'd get that connection that there is. And there used to be a shop in King's Kettle.
The singing kettle.
And they closed that now, because they closed the production company. But
they ended it all. They'd retired and.
Yeah, they ended it all. They also, all three of them, including
Gary,
they all got an MBE in 2015 for their services to music and entertainment.
Do you know, they I think it was every summer they would go across to the States. There was a big folk music festival, possibly Nashville, that they would go across. They were always invited across and they would go and play, and they were huge at this festival.
Yep. Well, that's what I was going to say. Cilla, before Sing Kettle, was a really... on the Scottish scene, a really well-known folk singer, apparently.
And her brother, apparently.
Really? I don't know.
Her brother is a really well-known folk musician as well. So they're properly trained musicians.
But, I mean, that's what it was. It was just folk music. Mm-hmm. It was fun folk music.
Well, I don't know. Like, Little Buddy Fufu running along the forest.
Mr. MacIver, who drove the train to Glasgow.
But these are all sort of like, a lot of them were based on old stories and stuff.
What were they bashing on the head?
Bunnies. Field mice. No, the bunny was scooping mice, up the field mice and bashing
bopping
them on
the
head.
Bopping
them on the head.
Green party wouldn't like that, would they, Mags?
As long as you put them back afterwards.
As long as you don't dock for tails, it's fine.
No,
just dock their wages instead.
So, well, I think I am proud to say that there is Fife, and there were people to go into the Fife Hall.
Gary is the greatest multi-instrumentalist of his generation.
Yeah. Well, I saw a good video of him playing the trombone on YouTube earlier, and I did not know he played the trombone.
One of my VHS covers, I'm sure, had the trombone.
Yeah, I feel like Gary never really got the credit. So, and also, just to wrap this up, maybe we can go and see if they're at the Fringe this year. So, after they they retired the Singing Kettle brand in 2015.
Just 2015?
But Gary and two other people who were doing it have continued under a new brand called Funbox, which sounds quite dodgy.
They could do adult shows, totally. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, I do.
When I say adult shows...
singing all the Singing Kettle songs for adults.
Well, yeah, but you could make them like sweary and lewd and stuff and have them in a place where you can have pints. It'd be fucking great.
And this thing, watching
the... Hey, man, you should come with us. You'll love it. You'll love it.
I will absolutely hate it.
Do the hand gestures and everything. I'm wildly flinging
about my V's.
I know I don't have to, but I will allow this to happen, if only because the Carnegie Hall needs something to be on. Let's face it, it's always the Singing Kettle. So, yeah, go on.
No, I'm definitely in with them. I like the part where you said, you know, that they definitely influenced my love of the music I listen to. They're definitely there, yeah.
I despise them. I'm tough on the Singing Kettle, tough on the causes of the Singing
Kettle. It's always funny when there's a populist idea.
Childhood, didn't
there's
it?
A populist idea and Mark just fucking rallies against it.
I don't know. But,
this is definitely one for the website, for the Facebook page.
Yes.
In fairness.
Who likes the Singing Kettle? And who, we could do a poll. Can you do polls on Facebook?
I've never met anyone else who doesn't like the Singing Kettle. Who's from Scotland?
Yeah.
I've met people, my cousins in England are like, what is this shit? My uncle once said to me, why don't you just watch City?
Oh, you just don't get it. Yeah, never mind. Well, that was a lovely wee addition and a fantastic rant from Mark. Beautiful.
I just worry about children with thumbs for hands.
The middle eight.
Just shoot them. It'll be better than having a mince and onion break.
Oh, wow.
Whoa!
I think that brings us to a close tonight.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
And as we are coming to a close, I take it everybody's happy with that.
We've not done the socials at any point.
Please talk to us on facebook.com/fifeclubpod or at Fife Club. Twitter at Fife Club.
Yep.
Instagram, Fife Club, or email us at fifeclubpod@gmail.com.
Oh, the boys doing it from memory now.
Oh, hey, my God.
What a role.
So, yeah, thanks for that, Jamie. Also, just a quick thing to say, we will not be here next week. I'm on holiday and I'm taking the mic with me. So, this
whoa,
is why.
Whoa, we don't
whoa,
know
whoa, whoa,
that.
What's up?
Yeah, this is why.
Get that good audio recording on those home sex tapes. Wow.
Oh my god. What I'm probably going to do is actually record a little bit of some of the soundscapes up where
oh my god, going. That'll be boring.
Oh, that sounds
tedious.
Are you
going
to make us listen to this when you come back from holiday? Well, is this the 21st century slideshow?
Excuse me. It's just for me. I'm saying it's just for me. However, this might actually be a little bit of a podcast next week. It's just some lovely cammy sound.
Just show you what terrible person.
Songs in the Singing Kettle.
Well, also politically, we might just be absolutely fucked by that point, and some cammon seascapes might be what you need.
I was at Mags had a party a few weeks ago, and there was a guy with headphones on and a microphone, and I thought he was making field recordings, which is a huge subculture on the internet.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I was like, "Oh, you're doing field recordings?" And he was like, "Oh no, I have hearing problems, and it helps me hear." And I felt like the biggest arsehole. So I basically felt like myself. Just a connected story. I just thought the listeners hate me even more. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, but he was totally cool about it.
Jamie putting still, his foot in it once again.
Still the shame still lives in my heart. Oh god.
Well, that is the time of the night then that I do have to ask Mags, what is our motto this week?
Oh, I thought we were taking it in turns.
No.
Do I have to do
it? You're sitting Beatty's seat, you've got to do it.
Yeah.
I did signpost this last week if you'd listened.
So the motto this week is
Don't play with scalding hot water.
No, I'm gonna go for a sprite handle lid of metal. What's inside Mark's singing kettle?
Oh.
Hot water.
Right, good night.
Good night.
Night. Night.
It's alright. Someone who was once told he was well hung. But what
was... Laughing at your own jokes.
So, where are we?
We're talking about the fringe.
Yeah.
Have we got time?
Probably got a wee bit of time to do that, yeah. And then we'll see where we're at. Cool.
I've got a really good Fife Hall of Fame.
Right, well,
Just a few minutes at the end, because I didn't. Yeah. Last time I came on, I had a good Fife Hall of Fame and I didn't get
to do
it.
Well, we really need to do it again. We need to pick it up. And so I think, since this is the last episode of this season, which we'll get into in a little bit, but since it is, we'll do a Fife Hall of Fame to go into when we come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Right.